This is The Urban Connection, the weekly show on issues that affect the community.
As the coronavirus pandemic continues to affect every American, we're joined by a medical expert with tips to protect yourself and your older loved ones.
Last year or so, this time, if somebody started to have a little bit of a cough or a fever, maybe they would say, well, you know, maybe it's just a cold. I'll kind of see where it goes. I don't have to call my doctor right now. Let's just see what happens. Well, now it's different. So getting early medical advice for new symptoms is really important.
I'm Leonard Birdsong. The Urban Connection starts right after this.
Now, The Urban Connection continues. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
You know, the United States, as well as the world, is going through a horrible pandemic of the coronavirus. And lots of people are perishing. A lot of people are dying. There are a lot of cases in the United States, and it seems to be growing every day. I know that older people with underlying medical conditions are at risk of the severe of the consequences from this virus. And so I wanted to bring on someone who could tell us more about it for our community and for the rest of the world. My guest is Dr. Lori Archbold. She is a geriatric physician, and she is in Virginia. She's an associate professor of geriatric medicine at the University of Virginia, and she has her own practice. She went to the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, has been in practice for several years. Dr. Archbold, welcome to the Urban Connection. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Listen, you are a geriatric physician, but is it geriatrician? Is that the way you should say it?
Either is fine. Geriatric physician or geriatrician. Physician focused in the care of older adults.
Okay, well, so why don't we start out telling everyone what a geriatric physician does? What kind of medicine is this?
So as a geriatrician, as a geriatric physician, I serve patients in a couple different ways. One is as a primary care provider. So as the PCP for anyone older than 65 in terms of managing their chronic medical conditions and staying active and healthy. Also as a geriatrician, we're also subspecialty trained in the care of the elderly. So we can also augment and be a consultant for primary care providers. So if somebody has a particular question about changes with aging, polypharmacy, that's taking a lot of medications, perhaps falling or declining functionally or cognitively, then we can be a consultant and help to work through those issues with someone as well. Those are the two main roles that we have from an outpatient standpoint in the clinic. We also work with patients in hospital settings, in nursing homes, and in long-term care settings as well.
Wow, that's an awful lot. What got you into geriatrics as a specialty?
Well, I always joke with my medical students to say that I knew from birth I was going to be a geriatrician, because that's sometimes how it feels like when you talk to people about their path, but of course it's never true.
Yes, right.
In undergraduate studies, I was very much interested in history, wanting to also do medicine, and was a major in the history of medicine and science at Johns Hopkins University, and was fascinated with a lot of what I studied and what I learned, especially through personal story. I kind of took that interest through medical school, wanting to both practice medicine as well as to really get to know people. And working my way through training, thought that I was going to go into infectious diseases, so specialize in internal medicine, and then thinking about subspecializing in infectious diseases. But when I really got into practicing medicine, what I realized, the patients that I found most impactful were geriatric patients, either patients that I just enjoy working with the most personally from a professional aspect. As we age, there can be just the normal changes that come with aging that can add complications on top of general medical conditions, but also the role of personal story in health becomes so much more important as we age. You know, what are our goals? What are we looking for from the healthcare system? What do we want? What are our goals in life? And being able to address that in a more holistic way is what brought me into geriatric medicine and what I love about geriatric medicine.
Well, thank you for doing all of this. Let us move on. And it's been written, people who are older or with underlying medical conditions risk the most severe consequences from the coronavirus, but they're also most at risk for social isolation. I take it this is not good, doctor. Is that right?
It's not good. So social isolation is something that we've worked against in geriatric medicine even before coronavirus. Social isolation, when we're isolated in our home, has increased risk for our health, increased risk for our mental health, but also our physical health. And so now, more than ever, this is such a critical issue to address, to understand the differences between the need for social distancing amidst the coronavirus pandemic to not also have social isolation. So that's an important distinction to make, and hopefully one that we can discuss moving forward.
All right. Well, listen, I want to know then, first of all, is there a difference between the social distancing and social isolation and quarantine? Sometimes people put these all together and they're interchangeables. I don't know if they should be. That's what I want to know.
Right. So there are three distinct terms, and they mean three different things. People will sometimes use them interchangeably, but they're three different things. Mm-hmm. So quarantine is a formal term that means you have a infection and you need to be quarantined away from others to prevent the spread of infection. So that is in kind of the small pocket of people who are infected. Mm-hmm. Social distancing is a tool that we've heard a lot about to maintain distance between people so as to limit the spread of infection between individuals. And so that's where a lot of the different regulations, the different limitations on restaurants and going out and the schools, that's where social distancing is trying to limit the space between people to limit the spread of infection.
Got it.
Social isolation is when we're just alone and we're really kind of isolated from the outside world, period.
And isolation is bad, I guess, because with this pandemic, families can't visit their loved ones who are in the hospital suffering and may die because they don't want them to be infected. Is this part of social isolation? It probably doesn't help the person who's sick.
Well, it's a balance of the need for social distancing with the need for infection control. And in these extreme situations that we're in now, there are new measures that are in place to help prevent our most vulnerable people and prevent spread amongst the community. And so there are ways to balance the need for physical distancing, social distancing, to try to avoid social isolation, even when we can't be there in person.
Were there risks of social isolation before we had the coronavirus?
There are. There is a whole literature that I won't bore you with, but the short of it is that that social isolation can have great impact in physical health, poor health outcomes, in addition to mental health and our overall well-being. And so social isolation is really something to avoid even before all of this. Even more challenging now to avoid that when we have to also balance it with social distancing. But there are creative ways to do that. And so one example is for residents that live in long-term care. So a lot of our long-term care facility residents we know are at extremely vulnerable to infections, and certainly in current context of the COVID-19 infection need to be as protected as possible from getting infection. And so visitors, for example, may not be allowed anymore in facilities. Now, that doesn't mean that visitors can't interact with the residents. And so thinking through creative ways to do that is something that we here have been working with our local facilities to try to assist with. And we've heard so many great creative ways that local activities coordinators who would be working in facilities are doing to help engage the residents as well as engage the residents with their families. Some of these are scheduled audiovisual check-ins, so things like FaceTime or Skype or Zoom. A lot of different platforms are available, but to not just say you can use them, but to really say, let me help you connect on these with your family, and we will do that, you know, every day at 2 o'clock, or for you, you know, we'll do that every day at, you know, whatever time, to be able to have that reliable check-in more than just a, you know, you can make a phone call. other ways that some facilities are doing it. They're doing what they call window visits, where it's a scheduled time where people can be kind of on other sides of the windows, but be able to connect with each other, even though they're still maintaining an appropriate distance to prevent infectious spread, but being able to still connect with their family. So there are a lot of great facilities that are really thinking through creatively how to still engage with families in the community, even if we physically can't be in that space.
Dr. Archibald, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. We're discussing the coronavirus pandemic and ways to protect yourself with Dr. Lori Archibald, a geriatric doctor and associate professor of medicine at the University of Virginia. We'll be back with more on The Urban Connection in just a moment.
More of The Urban Connection straight ahead. Stay tuned. Let's return to The Urban Connection. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
We're back with Dr. Lori Archibald, a geriatric doctor and professor of medicine at the University of Virginia. And we're discussing how senior citizens can avoid catching the COVID-19 virus. Dr. Archibald, you have 5 preventive tips that people should know about. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so the 5 preventive tips are kind of how I think of them and talk to my patients and staff and people that I work with, because there's a lot of anxiety right now. There's a lot of anxiety of the unknown. There's a lot of anxiety about coronavirus. And I think it's important to think about what do we know and what do we have control over to be right. able to take some control over preventing spread of infection. And there are 5 kind of general things that we can do. And usually when I'm talking with staff or students or my patients, I use my hand as a guide just to both remind me and to just kind of use as a visual to say, you know, let's think about these 5 things. So the first is hand washing. So hand washing, hand hygiene, it's simple. We've heard about it our whole lives. We always talk about it. We talk about it even more now, but we can't overstate how important it is. So to properly mm-hmm. clean our hands is critically important in the spread of this infection.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's the base of it all. Kind of as a corollary to that, and the second is to not touch our eyes, nose, or face. So our eyes, nose, and mouth, not to touch our face. So those are kind of the windows to our soul, if you will, and the way that virus can get in, right? Our bodies have a great defense system, but those are some of the vulnerable spots. So if we have virus on our hand, we touch our eyes, that allows it kind of to get into our body, or we touch our mouth. So really working to avoid touching our eyes, nose, and mouth, both for ourselves and to, you know, watch those around us and to remind them not to. So that's an important piece that we have control over as well. Cleaning the environment around us. So wiping down, cleaning high touch surfaces especially is an important piece of controlling all of this as well. The other 2 points are to avoid anyone visibly sick, right? So that's where that 6 feet comes from originally, to at least 6 feet away from somebody who's visibly coughing or sneezing. That is based on kind of the basic of the way the virus works, the virology of the infection. It can get propelled out of the body when somebody's sneezing or coughing, but it can't go too far. It can only go less than 6 feet. And so staying that distance is an important piece of preventing infection. And then the 5th is the social distancing piece, really preventing the contact in between person to person, because that's how the virus is also spread. So those are the 5 things that each and every one of us can do to help prevent the spread of this infection.
What do you think about the hot topic right now as to whether people who go out to the grocery store or go out for a walk should wear a mask, even if they can't get a medical mask? Maybe they should wear a bandana or something like that over their nose and mouth. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think it's a complicated issue. I think that our healthcare teams need to ensure that they have the proper tools to treat patients. Medical grade equipment is really important for medical teams to have. For the general population, for the general public, when we're going out, those 5 pieces are an important piece. If someone chooses to wear, say, one of the fabric or homemade masks in that situation to kind of re-encourage us not to touch our face, I think that that's okay. But those 5 tips are an important piece of it.
Okay. What are the health risks of social isolation to seniors? Many of them already have probably some underlying conditions.
The most direct answer to that can be not noticing that our chronic conditions are getting worse. And so if that's hypertension, high blood pressure, diabetes, whatever the chronic condition may be, if we're socially isolated, that can compound our ability to properly kind of manage those conditions.
Is that working on the immune system?
Well, it's a lot of different factors that come together. Some of it's the immune system itself. Some of it is kind of complex ways that different parts of the body systems work together. And others may just be that if we're not engaging with others, then we may not have the data points to kind of have the doctor looking at it or have somebody else seeing that, noticing that we're losing weight. If we're not eating well, we're socially isolating, we're losing weight, we're not eating well, and we might not notice that on a day-to-day basis, but somebody who sees us, you know, once a week or twice a week may be able to pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also having those outside eyes on it. And keeping up with our chronic conditions is important, and becoming more challenging even within the environment that we are in now with the coronavirus, because so much of our kind of medical focus is on prevention of coronavirus, identification, treatment, but it's still so important for each of us to remember that the chronic conditions that were there before coronavirus are still there now and still need to be taken care of. And so continuing to follow up with your physician as you were before all of this, the way in which you do that might be different now in terms of a lot of the outpatient practices are going to telephone visits or telehealth visits, and they may not be in person, but it's still important to keep up with, you know, your prescribed medications, to keep informed with your doctor, and to have a plan for your chronic conditions, even with the changes that are going on now.
I've been following the things in New York and also in Florida, and the news I get is basically if you're 80 years old or older and you contract the virus, you probably have not a long time to live. What do you say about that?
I think that the epidemiology of the virus, in terms of kind of what we know about where it's been before and the spread that we've seen and the mortality associated, does show us that as we're older, our risks of having severe outcome, including death, increase. That's very scary and very important to inform our decisions ahead of time, right? So to inform our decisions of prevention, that's where the whole life changes of social distancing are critically important, as well as the other ways that we can prevent the spread of infection. So prevention on the front end is really important to control what we can and try to prevent spread. The other side of that is if we do start to have symptoms, last year or so this time, if somebody started to have a little bit of a cough or a fever, maybe they would say, well, you know, maybe it's just a cold. I'll kind of see where it goes. I don't have to call my doctor right now. Let's just see what happens. Well, now it's different. If we do develop new symptoms that are respiratory symptoms or any sign of fever, we really need to call our primary care providers to connect with them, to talk with them, to call first, but to talk with them to see what, if anything, different that we need to do. So getting early medical advice for new symptoms is really important.
All right. That's good to know. Now, as you may know, I told you my program, this public affairs program, The Urban Connection, is aimed mainly at African Americans who might not hear this kind of information on other radio stations. Do you have anything you would like to say, especially to the African American community, about trying to stay away from the virus or not getting stuck with it?
Yeah, I think prevention is the key. Maintaining social distancing is a really important piece of this all, but also using our connections in the community to check in on each other. So when we are practicing social distancing, we're not going out to our regular group events. We're not going out, you know, perhaps to our regular faith-based events, but we still need to activate our community to check in on each other, to call our friends and neighbors, call the members of our community who may be more at risk for social isolation and check in on them, see how people are doing, see, you know, if we're in a different demographic that can, you know, be more safely going to the store, maybe offering ways to support, you know, grocery store trips and that sort of thing. So engaging with your community, but being creative how to do that while maintaining social distancing is going to be an important part of our community working together to get through this.
All right. You know, this is all very helpful, and this is a scary time. I didn't know that you had done your undergraduate work in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins, but I've known other people who've gone there as undergraduates, and I know it's a good school. You were interested in history. I just learned a couple of days ago that the word quarantine comes from Italy. Basically, when the bubonic plague was coming to Europe, It was brought over from the East by traders to Italy, and the Italians wouldn't let people off the boat for 14 days or something like that, or 40 days. And the word, I guess, would be quarantina or something like quarantina in Italian.
That's interesting. I didn't know that full history. Thanks for sharing that.
Like you, I'm probably more into history than I am into medical things, but it's just interesting how these things come along. Now, we know that the plague, bubonic plague, came around several times in medieval Europe, and it never seems to die out. Do you think it's going to be the same way with the coronavirus, that perhaps we'll hit a peak and it'll become better and then it might come up again?
I don't know the answer to that. I do know that the infection control programs that we have now and the public health infrastructure that we have is a whole lot better than we did then. So, you know, really listening to our public health teams in terms of how to prevent spread is an important piece of this, as well as our own personal prevention of infection, but also from a community standpoint, really listening to what our experts are telling us in terms of how to prevent this spread and prevent it in the community will hopefully help from getting into cycles with this.
And I think that people are taking to that. There are not a whole lot of people out on the street or in the grocery stores these days, but people are distancing themselves from each other. And I think it's being done in a nice way. Now, I spoke, and again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I talked to another doctor a couple of weeks ago who indicated to me that during the 1918 pandemic of the Spanish flu, that many people said that only white people died of the virus and most black people didn't. Had you ever heard about that?
Well, I think, you know, one thing to think about in terms of testing and reporting of positive results is availability of tests and access to screening and whether or not that's equitable amongst all groups.
Yeah, well, it's not, I'm sure. Okay. I'll just tell you that. You know that, and I know that, too. I don't know how many people of different races died in the United States from the 1918 pandemic, but there were people, according to the doctor that I talked to, people were saying that African Americans didn't get the flu, the Spanish flu, like white people did. Now, part of that may be that there were more white people going over to Europe and catching it and, you know, not getting in good conditions. It was World War I. Again, these are all tough questions, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm glad that I've had a chance to speak to you and tell our audience about some of the preventive tips they can do or use. Mm-hmm. And we don't know how this virus is going to end, but we hope it will end, and we hope it'll end without too many more deaths. I cannot believe what's happened in Italy. I've been to Italy several times, and I love the place. I don't speak Italian, but I know enough to get around. But I just can't imagine all the deaths. It's just horrible. And it's getting bad in the United States, too. So at any rate, Dr. Archibald, thank you so much for coming on the Urban Connection. I'm going to give you the last word. What would you like to tell listeners about taking care of themselves again in this time of pandemic?
We'll get through this. Connect with your friends, connect with your family, call your doctor if you have symptoms, and focus on how to prevent infection.
Sounds good. Doctor, thank you so much for coming on the Urban Connection. I hope I didn't put you on the spot too much, but
thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I told you I'm pretty good at asking questions. You know, for many years I was a lawyer, so I've done a lot of court work. But anyway, I thank you again, and stay healthy for us all. Okay.
Thank you. You stay well as well.
All right. This is Leonard Birdsong. We're on the Urban Connection. We've been speaking with Dr. Lori Archibald. She is a geriatric physician in Virginia, and she's also an associate professor at the University of Virginia. She's told us some things that we should know. Take it to heart.
That wraps up this episode of the Urban Connection with your host, Leonard Birdsong, a production of Syndication Networks of Chicago. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of the Urban Connection.